From those to whom much is given, much is expected. Quoted from Luke 12:48, penned by Mary Gates, son of Bill Gates, on the day that her son Bill and Melinda are getting married, back in 1994. She's witnessing, in the years prior to this, her son Bill, the helm of Microsoft, growing wealthy, and extremely wealthy, and we may say filthy rich. And she's also witnessing her son Bill not giving anything to anyone. And she's concerned that he's not sharing this wealth. Bill and Melinda read the letter, but it doesn't immediately get through to them. Bill is too busy running Microsoft to be concerned about philanthropy and about the continued requests that keep coming to his door. He doesn't want to be distracted. Mother Mary passes away of breast cancer 6 months later. But Bill's father is relentless, carrying the message that Mary gave. This message of responsibility and accountability. To whom much is given, much is expected. Finally, Bill sort of caves and says, "Okay, Dad, I get it. You help me." And immediately, Bill's father takes up the challenge. And it's no small challenge, because by now there are boxes and boxes of ignored requests, of letters sent to them. And Bill's father begins to wade through those and helps Bill to be able to become a generous man. And a few months after his mother's death, with the help of his father, $100 million was allocated to what would become the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which now disperses not millions but billions of dollars each year, mostly to the efforts to improve health and education around the world. Well, I'm not Bill Gates, even though I've been told I look like him. Maybe I have some wealth in my future if it's discovered to be a long-lost cousin or something. But what does this have to do with you and I? We're certainly not rich like Bill Gates, even though we might pretty quickly, when taking an inventory of our own lives, realize that we have been given much. Now, contrary to what seems to be the message of this parable, this, I don't think, is necessarily a message about rewarding success and punishing failure. But it seems to me this parable is not so much about success as it is about faithfulness. It's about God having high expectations of us because we have been given so much. This text, known as the parable of the talents. The word talent, a double meaning. Its original meaning in the Greek New Testament refers to, yes, a huge sum of money. In the ancient world, a talent was worth what an ordinary laborer could earn over the course of 15 years. So in today's dollars, just doing a little simple math, that would be about $750,000 for the one talent person. And $3.25 million to the five-talent guy. So given each of these servants one or more talents, the master is, in this story, entrusting them with a fortune. That's what the parable wants to communicate, that this isn't pocket change. The second meaning to the word talent is one that we use when we talk about natural gifts and abilities. Talent has come to mean mainly ability or skill. We say that someone has a talent for music or for cooking or for business or construction or for listening. But the parable of talents, again, isn't primarily, I think, about money or ability. Like me, you've heard the story of how we should use our talents, taking what God has given to us and making the best of it. And I preached that sermon myself. I've used this text on more than one occasion. It comes up in the lectionary cycle every 3 years, and I'm not sure I've preached it every 3 years, but it's there every 3 years. And it works quite well this time of the year, doesn't it, Ron, when we start, and Donella, and Rose, when we start to put together that budget for the next year. And when we start to gear up for Interfaith Hospitality Network, and we need your help, we need you to step forward and use your talents. This passage works perfectly. But I wonder if this parable isn't about something even more basic, about trust and faithfulness. For the story opens with an act of trust. The master is about to leave town on a journey. He's a journeying one. He likes to take trips for some reason. And each is given a different sum of money. Yet each is given this huge amount, as we just said, one, two, or five talents. It's clear that the master has entrusted to each of them big time. He hands it over, no questions asked, no comment, just gives it. And after a long time, he comes back from the journey and asks what's happened. Two of them have doubled their money and the third has made nothing. He returns to his master exactly what he's received. It turns out that his master simply buried the measure in the money in which was common practice in ancient times, and reveals his reason for his action: fear. Fear of the master. His trust in the master is zero. So he's reduced his financial risk to zero. Yet he also reduced the possibility of profit, so that it too was zero. And the story leaves us with an unanswered question. How would the master have responded to the first two servants had they not brought in a profit? What if they had simply put their money at risk and come back empty-handed, or had lost? We don't know. The story doesn't tell us. The parable does not give us a clue, but I think maybe there's a hunch that the master would have accepted them. After all, the parable, what he commends is not their profits, but their faithfulness, their willingness to take risks. He does not commend the servant who produced five talents more than the one who produced two. Each receives the same praise. Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You've been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Actually, they've been entrusted with way more than a few things. But in responding to the third servant, the master makes it clear that he would have been happy to accept anything, even rock bottom 1% Univest savings account type interest. No knock on Univest. It was motivated by fear. Moreover, it's notable that the servant who is given five talents makes five talents more. The one who makes two receives two more. The doubling in each case suggests that the growth is sort of automatic. Not the cleverness of the servants necessarily that produces more, but rather their willingness to trust, to risk. And the third servant paints this ugly picture of a grasping master who demands success at all costs. And what the servant gets for his trouble is exactly his fear of rejection. He's a small-minded one who insists that his master is just as small-minded. And the other two servants, on the other hand, and there's contrast going on here, recognize generosity when they see it. The piles of money that they've been entrusted reveal this one who's generous in every way, who takes risks for them, on them, who accepts them, who even honors them with his estate. Finding themselves in that place of receiving such outrageous trust, they feel empowered and are willing to take risks of their own. The love their master has shown them overcomes any fear that they may have of rejection or failure. They realize the one who entrusts them this money is an open-handed one who's much more concerned with love and generosity than in returning a profit. And I think that this brief parable here about a master and his three servants sort of turns again upside down the standards of society. It announces that the worst thing that can happen to us is not failure. The worst thing that can happen to us as we make God out to be this punitive one who is this vengeful taskmaster who rejects us when we fail. That's the worst thing we can do. The worst thing is never risking in the eyes of God. The fear that kept the treasure in the ground is an act of mistrust and fear. And that freedom that the other two have experienced puts the treasure at risk. Sure, there may be loss, but that's in itself an act of great faith. In response to the great faith and generosity modeled by the journeying one. Some of us, and we were talking about this, Jessica and Steve and I were talking about this a bit before the service. Some of us have spent a lifetime overcoming our fear of the view of God harbored by this third servant. We fear judgment. We've taken small risks, maybe, because we've been afraid of being condemned if we failed. We play it safe and come to the end of our life sometimes realizing our mistakes at playing it too close to the chest. I remember my CPE, clinical pastoral education supervisor, in supervision one day, and we were to have honest conversations there, and he said to me, Wayne, he said, I experience you sort of as a middle-of-the-road guy. Don't fall and get too far on one side where you fall in that ditch or on the other side where you fall. You like to play it safe in the middle of the road. And yeah, Phil, you got that pretty right. I said, how about taking a few more risks with the group? Putting a little bit more out there. Trusting a little bit more that your colleagues are going to be there to support you, even when you look foolish. It was a challenge. Opportunity to grow a little. We can learn from our failures. And it's often failure that produces that indelible lesson that we've learned. How many of us can look back on our experiences of life where we really blew it and realize that depending upon how we dealt with that, whether we were able to find some healing in it and release, that it became this part of something much bigger that God could use. But when we see God as punitive, we are often fearful, like this third servant, and so we play it safe. We don't risk loving lavishly and investing freely in the work of the kingdom. And as I reflected back on the Gospels, it's sort of crowded with people there to sort of shock us into the recognition of that great mistake not to trust God. There's that other parable in Luke's Gospel of that snide elder brother who refuses to welcome home the prodigal son. He's played it safe. This younger brother has been lavish and foolish and prodigal in his own way. And he's the one that's being thrown a party. There's these all-day workers in yet another parable who demand that the late arrivals receive less than they who showed up early, prompt, on time, there at the beginning, and these people who slept in and got up at the crack of noon, they get the same wage. And the Pharisee who tries to talk God into accepting him because he's kept all the rules, not because God is merciful. All these lived in this fearful world where grace is absent and slackers get thrown into some imaginary fire. We understand these people because we too have been there. We've been known somehow or another in our lifetime to bury our talent out of fear. We've been there. We know what it's like to misperceive and mistrust God, to live in that judgment or fear of judgment. What if the true and only God has no interest in keeping score? Whether you've got more or less. What if God's concern is simply that we all get up and take risks, take our turn at the bat, so to speak? What if we use something so small as what we've been given to go across the street and greet a neighbor who just moved in, or make that phone call to someone who's recovering from surgery? They seem like sort of one talent things to do, don't they? Here at PMC, just a week ago yesterday, we witnessed a story of trust and risk. Jumpy, and she's ill today and not here, had felt she received so much from the Master through our generosity. She'd received a talent to share, not just from us, but through a lifetime of her own experiences. And she took this risk. Some of us said, well, are you going to have an RSVP? How are you going to know how many people to prepare for? No, just invite the community. Well, should we target a certain group? No, just invite the community. Anyone who wants to come. But her faithfulness with the help of her friends, Leona and others of her friends, and others from here. God blessed their efforts, and people were blessed, and loaves and turkeys were multiplied. By a lavish, generous God, I think they grew in the ovens, those turkeys. The good news of Jesus gives new meaning to success and security. Success is found not so much in accumulating more than we can ever use, but in our willingness to risk to in response to God's invitation. And I love, Wayne, your challenge to all of us and to me personally to risk in the kingdom, to risk with our children and our grandchildren, to entrust, to empower, to enable them, for them to take their own risks. Security is found not in keeping pace in a paranoid world, but in the utterly reliable God who trusts us before we even trust ourselves in the littlest measure, who risks and asks that we risk too. We might think of ourselves as the one talent church, probably not the five talent church. I don't know what that would be. Do we believe in ourselves and in God's lavish love for us? Can we grow in our trust that we have talents to employ and bless this community? Will we share the stories of the talents that have been multiplied? We'll be given that opportunity in the second hour to tell the stories of our faithfulness, maybe our failures too. But then to be able to bless and to see and to feel our confidence grow. That yes, we do have something to invest in this community, and we are doing it, and we can see those ways that we are called and will bless others. And the kingdom of God will grow on earth as it is in heaven. Thanks be to God.